Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. There are lots of numbers that reveal how many people are living with HIV and AIDS. Statistics can tell us one thing, but it's definitely not the whole story when it comes to HIV's effect on our Native community, family, and culture. Today, there are many health advocates that are working to keep the number of people living with this syndrome down. What efforts are taking place in your community? Stay with us as we talk about HIV and AIDS in Native America, right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Several members of the Native American community in Rapid City, South Dakota, are coming together to form a new organization aimed at improving race relations. The move comes in the wake of a police shooting last month involving a Native American man. The shooting occurred about 24 hours after a rally against police brutality. Charles Michael Ray has more.
Elizabeth Cooklin says she doesn't call the police. Cooklin is a college professor and a Lakota author of several books, but she says she doesn't trust the police to serve the interests of Native people in the community.
You know, when a woman is being abused in her home and she calls the police, she doesn't call the police because she wants him shot. She calls the police because she needs help. So, I'm afraid to call the police. I have never called the police. What we need to do is we need to talk to the police about their methods and their protocol.
The Rapid City Police Chief, Carl Jagaris, says public trust in the police department is critically important. He says he is willing to sit down with members of the Native community to hear concerns. That's part of what those like Chase Ironize say needs to happen. Ironize is an attorney and founder of the group Last Real Indians. He says the new organization being formed in Rapid City is looking into creating Native-run neighborhood watch-like groups and a civil rights panel to hear any grievances against the police.
Native people are only seen as the protesters or angry voices with signs and rallies. When in fact, we've reached a critical mass of professionals, educators, teachers, lawyers, business owners, writers, content creators, and we need to capitalize on that. We really need to take our place in the city here.
Ironize says the Native community needs to take issues into their own hands and come up with new initiatives and solutions. He adds that he's looking forward to a town hall-type meeting the mayor is planning to hold in Rapid City in an effort to build cross-cultural communication. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City.
Today, in the fourth part of our series of stories about climate change in Alaska Native people, KNBA's Jocelyn Estes reports on the rising costs of structures often associated with warming temperatures.
In much of Alaska, homes, bridges, roads, and other infrastructure are built on soil that froze during ice ages thousands of years ago and remained frozen year-round. Now, permafrost is thawing. When permafrost that's a mix of ice and soil melts, the water often flows away and the ground drops, dips, and heaves. Buildings sink into the ground. Jack Hebert is the founder and CEO of the Cold Climate Housing Research Center in Fairbanks. He says some homes become uninhabitable.
Absolutely. You can drive around Fairbanks and see many of those. And the economic impact can be catastrophic to a household if a home has to be abandoned because of the soil is becoming so unstable that the foundation of the house fails.
The state of Alaska estimates it's spending tens of millions of dollars every year smoothing out and repaving roads damaged by permafrost. In a 2007 report, the University of Alaska Anchorage Institute for Social and Economic Research estimated climate change effects from then to 2030 would add $4 to $6 billion to the cost of maintaining or replacing infrastructure in Alaska, such as water and sewer systems, harbors, and runways. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Tomorrow, we'll end our series on climate change with a story about government agencies and resources. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the 5th Annual Native American Training Institute, April 12th. Information on services and the NATI event at ahcnm.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Since the rise in HIV and AIDS of the 80s, a lot has happened. There is more understanding, and medical treatments and medications are helping more people to live longer. With positive things to say about the efforts to help curb the number of people who are living with HIV and AIDS, it doesn't mean HIV infections are any less serious. HIV still has a hold on numerous Native Americans. Health advocates say the numbers of Native Americans who have HIV could be greater than what the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC, reports, including their statistic that says 20% of Native Americans and Alaska Natives who have HIV don't know they're infected with the virus. So we want to know what kind of dialogue is taking place in your community. We want to know what you think, too. Do you see HIV and AIDS awareness campaigns reaching your tribe? Are there reliable HIV testing and treatment programs, or are they lacking? Join the conversation today. Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go ahead and welcome our guests. From Grove, Oklahoma, is Dr. Pamela Jumper Thurman. She is an affiliate faculty member at Colorado State University in the Ethnic Studies Department, and she is Western Cherokee. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Dr. Jumper Thurman.
Thank you.
And would you like me to call you Doc, or would you prefer for me to call you something else?
You can call me Pam.
Okay, great. Pam, welcome to the hour. And also joining us from Denver, Colorado, is Alexander Whitetail Feather. He is the Executive Director of the National Native American AIDS Prevention Center, also known as NAPC, and he is a member of the Kushaya Band of Pomo Indians. Welcome to Native America Calling, Alexander.
Good morning.
And it's a pleasure to have both of you here with us today. And Alexander, I wanted to start with you. Can you provide, you know, some of the basics to us on HIV and AIDS? Please explain, you know, what is the virus and how does it affect our bodies?
Well, the virus is considered a DNA virus. So part of the virus is injected into parts of our immune systems, and it takes over the cells, replicates, and then does it again, and it replicates in the thousands. So one viral packet will produce thousands of viral packets, and then those thousands, they infect another cell, and so on and so forth. And it breaks down the immune system so that there is no defense against common bacteria, common other viruses, and it is primarily passed through blood. And blood can be found in, you know, most of our bodily fluids, and so it's you can pass it through unprotected sex, you can pass it through injection drug use, and any other method of blood-to-blood transfer.
And so also explain AIDS.
It's the acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, and that was the name that was provided, I believe, in 1983-84, very early on, for the disease that is caused when your viral load drops below 200. And so it used to be that you were HIV positive, and if your viral load dropped below 200, then you were considered to have AIDS. Not your viral load. My apologies for that. Your white blood cells. Not your white blood cell count. Your I'm having trouble remembering that at the moment.
All right. And Pam, also want to give you a moment. Anything you want to add?
No, I think Alexandra has covered it well.
All right, great. So, you know, as we get more understanding and, you know, this dialogue has been taking place for many years, I can even say decades on this. Alexander, anything you'd like to share about the effect that it has taken on our Native communities?
Well, I think that we are, and this is for every disease, we're kind of forgotten. We don't count when it comes to national policy. And every time there is funding that goes out for American Indians, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiians, every time there is a prevention effort, something that is designed specifically for us, it has been a big fight. And it's been due to activism. It's been due to people who are unwilling to let the disease become part of the fabric of American Indian life. And it's been a long, arduous fight. And NAPSE has been there since 1987. And there have been a lot of allies, a lot of people that have been part of the organization and have been advocating for the federal government to, one, live up to its treaty obligations of health care, and two, to really provide comprehensive prevention education to American Indians, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiians. So a patient that comes into the clinic, unless you have identified and, you know, you're raising your hand like, I'm an injection drug user, I am in this risk category, if you've identified that way, then maybe you'll get a test. But without doing that, that doesn't happen. And so the prevention efforts and all of the cookie cutter programs that have been developed don't take into account the unique cultural aspects of tribes and tribal members.
And Alexander, you know, how would you like to see things change?
I would like to be able to have each tribe develop its own or Native community, not just tribes, every Native community develop its own prevention program that was unique to what they needed and what they wanted. Each tribe is different. Each Native community is different. And instead of saying, okay, we're going to take this off the shelf and, well, we'll rearrange a few of these things and we'll change this over here, really tailoring it to what the community wants, let's start from the ground up. Let's start with, okay, everybody in this community, is there a word for health that we use on a regular basis? Are there community leaders? Are there tribal elders? Are there young people who want to become involved in preventing this disease? And to truly educate everybody about this virus doesn't care whether or not you are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, injection drug user, doesn't care. All it cares about is living. And to remove the stigma, if we could remove the stigma from the virus, one, and two, if we could remove the stigma from the risk categories, I think we'd be well on our way to ensuring that HIV was no longer in Native communities. So just those two things for each tribe. And I think that the federal government should be paying for that.
All right, Alexander, let's throw this out to our listening audience, too. You can also join us today. We are taking a look. What kind of work is being done in the field of preventing AIDS and HIV? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And, you know, what do you think about Alexander's thoughts on this, that each tribe should develop their own way of helping their community members? Call us right now. Are you already doing that? We want to hear about it too. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Pam, anything you'd like to add about what you've seen or you know, folks you are working with about the kind of effect this has had on our Native communities?
I would like to add more. I think that there's a general unawareness in our Native communities that HIV is an issue that needs to be dealt with. We have so many things that we need to deal with as Native people, diabetes, cardiovascular illness, but HIV is out there too, and we don't have good data, and that's very important. I would like to see two changes on a national level. One would be for all of the Indian Health Service, the urban clinics, and the satellite clinics to do testing for everyone that walks in, just as they do for cholesterol, just as they do for diabetes. I think everyone needs to be tested and not have to request testing or in any way single themselves out because of the stigma that is there and the lack of confidentiality in clinics. I'd also like to see changes in the data because we're a small population. So HIV affects us in ways that aren't always obvious. We're a tiny, tiny bit of the population, so our prevalence and incidence reports appear as if we don't have very much risk, and it's all based on CDC surveillance data. And this is not to criticize CDC, because they can only work with what they have, and they don't have the IHS data, they don't have the regional data, they don't have all of the urban clinic data as well. So what they report are severely underestimated numbers of what might be the risk in the Native community, especially when you consider the higher rates of chlamydia and gonorrhea and STDs.
And Pam, what do you think about that? That, you know, the numbers are making a difference, the type of support that maybe tribes are receiving or programs are receiving?
Well, in the funding cycle before last, CDC had funded four national organizations to provide technical assistance or capacity building services to tribes throughout the United States to build the infrastructure to establish testing, to bring awareness and education to the tribal level so that tribes could operate their area in a way that was culturally consistent with their beliefs. And in the last funding cycle, or the one previous to this one, there were three national groups that were funded, and ours was one of those groups, as was NAPSE. This funding cycle, Natives fell off of the radar completely, and none of us were funded to continue to provide the services to Native tribes that are so needed to build that infrastructure and to do the awareness and education. So that is a terrible travesty on the national level. And when Alexander mentions living up to the treaties, that's one very essential thing that must be done because our health care is different.
All right. Thanks for that, Pam. Again, phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And maybe you've seen the effects of HIV on your community. What do you think about the way communities respond? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Alexander, I wanted to get your take on that. You know, your thoughts on how numbers are affecting us in this way.
Well, Pamela is exactly correct. For example, I think the total number of American Indian and Alaskan Natives in California that are HIV positive is, and this is like a 2013 number, is about 477. And so when you take that and measure that against the total population of California, you become a very small decimal point number. And in the past, that's been referred to by federal agencies as statistically insignificant. And we take a very different approach to that, because what if one of those individuals is from one tribe, but that individual holds historical knowledge, understands songs, that are being taught to younger people, and they are the bridge. What if they're one of the last fluent speakers of their native language? When you put it in that context, that one individual and removing that one individual from the tribe is going to impact the future of the tribe. And that's how we look at it. So becoming HIV positive can be detrimental to a native community. And we want to prevent that as often as possible. And so the federal government, the CDC, Indian Health Service, they look at, you know, the larger numbers. And so when they see that it's a really, really small, like a 00% number, they're not going to be as interested in funding it or helping out these people. And so it's our job, it's my job, it's Pamela's job, it's everybody else's job to remind them, no, you need to pay attention to this. And another aspect is, I wanted to go back to something that Pamela said, and that is about Indian Health Service. If you are pregnant, then you automatically get an HIV test. So Indian Health Service has really good numbers for pregnant women. But again, they don't test men unless you go in and say that you're part of a risk group. And she's exactly correct. I mean, we need to totally change the mindset about testing. And testing is not as expensive as it used to be either. It's become more routinized. It's not as complicated. And it's changed. The tests have actually changed. So being able to provide that test is not a burden on IHS.
All right. Thanks for that, Alexander. And we don't have any representatives from IHS on the line, but if there are folks in the listening audience who can also comment on this and the way policies and procedures work, you're welcome to call in and educate us about how things go. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. I also want to bring attention to something that Alexander just shared about the numbers. What do you think about that? The way numbers in this case might be working against us to receive aid, to receive more health care. What do you think about that? And again, putting those words in there, treaty obligations. What do you think? 1-800-996-2848. 2848, that's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Alexander, are there any places in Native America that IHS is connecting to where they are, helping patients and treating people? We don't have information on that. Anything you can share with us, Alexander?
I do know that the Navajo Nation, which is in New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and I believe part of Colorado, they do have a facility there where you can go to be treated for HIV. However, I believe it is an IHS facility, and since 1987, 436 cases of HIV infection have been treated at Navajo Area Healthcare Facility. So they definitely do have that capability and have been performing those services for some time now. And I believe Alaska also has a center where people can go to be treated, not just to get a test, but to actually receive treatment. And those are the two that stick out most in my mind.
All right, thanks for that, Alexander. Again, phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Alexander, you mentioned earlier about stigmas attached to HIV and AIDS. What about when we talk about the terminology? You know, some of it is even just talking about this. Sometimes that can create a stigma. Anything to say on that?
Well, the stigma is that it's a gay disease, and that if you have HIV, you have been engaging in homosexual activity. That's the stigma, which is totally not true for the disease. That doesn't mean that if you are HIV positive, there are many ways that that could have happened. That's not to discount that MSM, or men who have sex with men, is not a significant portion of the population, but there are other ways to do that. And it's so that's one, like, global look at kind of stigma. But the other one is there are some tribes and some Native communities that when you talk about a disease, they believe that you're inviting that disease into the community. And so this goes back to what I was saying, that the prevention efforts have to take that into account, and it has to come from the community. So, and the federal government, CDC, large national organizations that don't necessarily work with American Indian communities, Alaska Native communities, they see that, they hear that, and they don't understand that. That it sounds odd to them. But you have to be part of that community to understand it. And I don't claim to understand all of the nuances of that statement, but I understand that I don't know, and that I understand that I need to ask the people that do know. And that's how you can build a really good prevention effort, by taking into account the cultural norms of the community that you're serving. So that's one way to get rid of stigma. I also think that people that are HIV positive, that have been living with the disease for many years, you know, they are a testament to the strength of Native people. And we should be able to engage them in conversations and have more, not role models, but more discussion about living with the disease. And it isn't a death sentence anymore. So that's another perception that's out there in Indian country, is that if you get HIV, you're going to die. And that's not necessarily true. However, again, American Indians, Alaska Native and Native Hawaiians, have the highest rate of death once they become infected, and about 80 with only 88% living longer than 3 years. So that's the shortest survival rate of any racial or ethnic category. And again, that still doesn't motivate the federal government to do what it needs to do. And so I think if we talk more about these statistics and really inform people about the actual effect that is happening on Native communities, we could have a lot more success.
That's a great statement, Alexander. We're going to break here. What do you think about what you just heard? Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can also connect with us on Twitter, and we're going to be right back. We're going to take a short break. The United States Department of Veteran Affairs has set the goal of ending homelessness among veterans by the end of the year. On the next hour of Native America Calling, we'll hear what's being done at the VA to meet this goal. With many Native Americans represented in all branches of service, how will this effort affect them? Join us for a discussion on Veterans Facing Homelessness.
Hey, Kiwanek Broadcast Corporation announces the Alaska Native Art Auction taking place on February 26, 2015 in Anchorage, Alaska. This one-of-a-kind event includes unique artwork from the Alaska Native community. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. If you would like to contribute art, reserve a table, or sponsorship, learn more at knba.org. Proceeds benefit National Native News Programming.
Wakka! The circle of life is a powerful force. Keep your circle healthy by getting a flu vaccine. Pregnant women, young children, elders, and anyone with chronic health conditions like diabetes, asthma, and heart disease are especially vulnerable. Your flu vaccine protects me. My flu vaccine protects you. Together, let's protect the circle of life by getting vaccinated. Learn more, call 1-800-232-4636 or visit cdc.gov/flu.
Support provided by Raven Alaska, offering passenger, cargo, and same-day package delivery to over 100 communities across Alaska. Find out more at flyravn.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and today we are talking about HIV and AIDS, and there are many prevention programs, including Native-led initiatives in every state. And they're reaching out to communities to help those facing HIV and AIDS. And are you connected to one of them? Call in and tell us what you're doing to help people in your community. And also, what would you like to tell people about preventing HIV? Our number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And on the line with us today is Dr. Pamela Jumper Thurman. She is an affiliate faculty member at Colorado State University in the Ethnic Studies Department. Also with us is Alexander Whitetail Feather. He's the executive director of the National Native American AIDS Prevention Center. And if you have any questions for them, feel free to call in and ask. Again, our number is 1-800-996-2848. I'd like to go ahead and go straight to the phone lines. On the line today, we have Kiosha, who is in Albuquerque, New Mexico, connecting to us through KUNM. Kiosha, what would you like to tell Native America?
Hi. Again, my name is Kiosha Peter, and I'm calling from Kirtland, New Mexico, and I'd just like to bring and shed light on the community organization that the younger people are currently conducting within Native nations. And first would be with the National Native American AIDS Prevention Resource Center, which is in collaboration with the NAS, with the Native Youth Sexual Health Network. And they have a youth council, which I'm a part of. And it's something that I really, really enjoy being a part of me because of all the support that I've been getting to do community activism and advocacy on HIV/AIDS in my own home community, which is in Navajo Nation. So on Navajo Nation, we have a movement called the Res Condom Tour, which was initiated by my dear friend and colleague, Matthew Skeet. And the goal of the tour is to promote healthy sexual activity and expression, along with increasing access to condoms by providing sexual health education for Diné youth and communities by giving free resources such as rapid HIV testing, condoms, and demonstrations. So this past summer and last year, we were able to go through a total of 6 communities along with 2 other communities where we did condom outreach at parade sites with various volunteers and people who were able to donate about 10,000 condoms to our cause just in our fall tour where we went to the parade. So with that said, we were able to connect with a lot of people on the Navajo Reservation to be able to bring more insight to the epidemic that is happening on our Native nations. But by being able to have that public interface and interaction, we're able to just help in the destigmatizing process.
So, and Kiosha, we hear that you're doing good work there, and I'm interested to hear, why is this important to you?
Oh, well, this is important to me because a lot of my friends and people that I know and engage with on a somewhat regular basis have participated, like, in unprotected sex or are at risk of HIV/AIDS, and a lot of times, like, we just want to provide, and I just want to provide a safe space for them to talk about, like, the situation that they're in, and if they're in need of condoms, then just to have them readily available, or something to, if they need resources, to have that readily available as well.
All right. Well, Kiosha, thank you for your call. Wish you the best. Please do keep us updated with some of the work you're doing. Feel free to post the next event where your group is going to be on our Facebook. And you can also provide information, too, if there are things you'd like to let us know about, especially people who are working in the arena of preventing HIV and AIDS. You can post it on our Facebook. Send us a tweet, or you can even call in too and tell us about it. 1-800-996-2848. Let's take another caller. We have Audrey in Cortez, Colorado, tuned in on KSJD. Audrey, what would you like to share?
I'm just calling. I am from Kianta, Arizona, on the Navajo Reservation, and I went to school in Durango at Fort Lewis College and studied gender and women's studies and sociology. And I just wanted to share that I had a very supportive mother of, like, gay rights as a young child, and exposed me to the Brandon Tina case and Matthew Shepard. And, you know, at a very young age, I was an advocate for making sure young people were exposed to safe sex, whether you were gay or straight. And it was just, AIDS was not talked about growing up, but I was very fortunate to have a mother to support that. And it's just wonderful to hear it on a radio station that it's acknowledging an epidemic that's going on the reservation.
All right, Audrey, thank you for reaching out to us there in Colorado. And again, phone lines are open, 1-800-99-NATIVE. We got another caller. We're bringing in Joe, who is in Anchorage, Alaska, tuned in on KNBA. And Joe, what would you like to share?
Yeah, good morning. This is Joe Cantill with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. And one of the last things that Alexander said before the break there was about how the statistics show that Native people are like in the top. Well, what he was saying was that Native people die within 3 years after diagnosis of HIV. They're dying of AIDS. So what that tells me is that they're entering care late in their HIV disease. So the probability that they've had HIV for quite a while, you know, anywhere from 5 years or 3 years up to seven to eight years. And so if they've gone undiagnosed that long, then the disease really impacts the immune system, making availability for infections to kill them. So people die from infections because their immune system is kind of ravaged and very vulnerable. So what that says, that should be the wake-up call for tribes and communities, that people are not getting tested. They're not being screened regularly. Providers aren't offering screening regularly. People at risk are not going in to get tested regularly. It seems that we're not catching people who were infected early enough in the disease to really provide treatment so that their lives last longer, so that they live a long life. People are living a long time now. It's with AIDS drugs and good treatment, but they have to get diagnosed first. And so if Native people are dying within 3 years after diagnosis, that means we're not getting tested early on and early enough. So just
all right, Joe, thanks for sharing your observation. Alexander, I want to give you a moment if there's anything you'd like to respond to.
Hi, Joe. And no, he covered it all.
All right. Thanks for your call. Let's take another one. We have Terry in Anchorage, Alaska, tuned in on KNBA. Hello, Terry.
Hi. I work with the clinical program at Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. I also work with Joe on provider training. And I just wanted to share how we're trying to reach rural Alaska Natives with HIV through telemedicine and collaborative care with their primary care providers out in the rural areas to try and give them the best standard of care they can get without them having to travel to an urban center, which is really difficult.
And Terry, is there anything you'd like to share about maybe what smaller communities can do to make sure, you know, connections are being made, or just even getting the word out, you know, you need to get tested? Any thoughts?
People just need to talk about it. The stigma is just intensified in small communities. And it's really helpful when people who have HIV are able to share and put a face to the disease, that it's not, you know, some boogeyman out there with it, but it's part of their community. And it's, you know, you, me, and other people that just were unfortunate and got the disease. We have a great prevention program. I was hoping they would call in. They have started a website called I Know Mine, where they will mail out condoms. They have lots of information. They have some training materials. They have a program. They're working on some video programs, tailoring them to the Native communities. You know, part of the problem we have is a lot of the materials that are developed for urban communities and not for rural Native communities, so they're just not very relevant.
And Terry, are there any contact numbers you'd like to put out? Sounds like you got a good resource going on there.
Well, I would say if you go to the iknowmine.com, that is a great resource for the prevention program.
All right, and that's no K-N-O-W? Yeah.
iknowmine, mine, mine.com. And they also have a link to a program here called I Want the Kit, where they can actually mail out at-home testing for gonorrhea, chlamydia, and trichomonas. And that's been a really successful program as well. But they can't mail it outside of Alaska. There are some other states participating.
All right, Terry, thank you for your call there in Anchorage, Alaska. And Alexander, any other resources, you know, since we're putting that out there, of places where people can connect, ask questions, any good resources to also share?
Well, normally I would say that it would be our website, but we are redesigning it. And it is, so you can call NAPSE at 720-382-2244. And we can answer a lot of those questions. Normally, the website would have many resources for natives, and those will be back up probably before April sometime. In the meantime, there's also, it's aids.gov. That is an excellent resource. And I believe they have a place where you can type in the zip code and find a testing site near you based on your zip code location. So that's one, that's a really good service that the government has provided.
All right. Pam, anything to add?
Yes, actually I do. There's several other resources that are specific to natives. One is the NAD resource, which is National Native HIV AIDS Awareness Day. That's going to be held on March the 20th this year. The spring equinox, and that's National Native HIV AIDS Awareness Day, nnhaad.org. And we have a whole lot of information available, as well as testing information, fact sheets, a toolkit, everything that people can utilize to raise awareness in their home communities. KSA, which is the organization that I was the former director of, is also on Facebook, and we keep blogs going. We keep articles, up-to-date things. There's an excellent blog on PrEP, which is something that we haven't gotten to talk about, that is a good discussion point, and that has a real good blog. Brandon River Gallagher has done a lot of work to bring information to us about what's available in the Native clinics. And some of our Indian Health Service clinics do offer the medication. So, and it's like an HIV vaccination in a sense, but that's available. There's all kinds of sites that are Native-specific from the different organizations, the National Two-Spirit Society out of New York, which is NES-S2, and that's .org also. So there's a lot of resources that are available.
All right. Thanks for that, Pam. And we'll be updating our website after the program. You'll find some of those resources. And I also want to remind you that we do archive our program. So if you wanted to listen to the program again and get some of the good information that's being shared today, you can just go to our website and you can find it there. I'd like to go ahead and bring in another guest. Joining us from Tulsa, Oklahoma is Tommy Chesbro, and he is the owner of Chesbro Consulting, and he is an HIV and AIDS activist. And Tommy has been living with HIV for 29 years. He is Cherokee and Lumbee heritage, and we want to go ahead and welcome him to the hour. Welcome to Native America Calling, Tommy.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And Tommy, it's great to have you with us. We just heard from a caller up in Alaska, and there were some words that stood out about, you know, when we put a face to this. And I'd like to hear from you, you know, how can things change if we start thinking about people who are living with HIV and AIDS and start thinking about these are our community members? What do you think about that, Tommy?
Well, I agree with my friend Joe Cantel about that. I mean, it's very important for people to actually see the faces of those living with HIV and understand that we are people just like anyone else with the same wants and needs, and we are much more alike than we are not alike. Just like a lot of stigmas, we tend to pick out one thing about a person and tend to think that just because of that one thing, we have nothing in common. When people actually get to know people with HIV, they can see that we really do have a lot in common, and that it helps to break down those barriers and those walls between individuals that are infected and those that are not, and help reduce that stigma. And as Alexander mentioned, stigma is one of the biggest reasons why one of the biggest things that fuels this epidemic is stigma, is what I'm trying to say. People don't go get tested because of stigma. People don't get treated because of stigma. People don't get educated because of stigma. You can just go on and on.
And Tommy, you know, anything else you'd like to share, maybe even advice for those who have recently found out that they are HIV positive?
Well, I work with a lot of newly infected people over the years. I've worked with lots of newly infected people, and you know, one of the things that I hear a lot from them is that they feel like their life is over, and that they are unlovable or untouchable. And what I always like to inform them and talk to them about is that they really don't know that. That there's the possibility of living a very long life now with the treatments that are available, and possibly just as long as you would have lived without HIV infection. And as far as being lovable or finding someone to be in your life, you can't know that either. My partner and I have been together for almost 20 years, and I used to have that same feeling that I was unlovable and would push people away. And I had a friend tell me that I was pretending to be God, and I didn't have the right to tell people whether or not they could love me. And so I think one of the things is learning to love yourself as a person living with HIV. And once you can do that and realize that just because you have HIV doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean that you're tainted. It doesn't mean that you're a pariah. When you can come to love yourself as a person living with HIV, then others can love you too.
All right. Thanks for that, Tommy. Tommy, we got calls we want to bring in. We're going to go ahead and go back up to Anchorage, Alaska. We have Taja on the line who is connecting to us today. Taja, what would you like to add?
Thank you for having me. I would like to just add some resources for here in Alaska for my fellow Alaska Natives that the Alaska Native Tribal Health System provides. Specifically for our youth, we have the iknowmine.org website that provides information what it's like to get tested, stories from HIV-positive individuals who are leaving positive, well lives. Also, information about how to ask for HIV tests in their villages, in rural hubs, and what it's like to receive a positive diagnosis. In addition, Here at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium at the Alaska Native Medical Center, we have a whole dedicated team that treats all of positive Alaska Native individuals and treats them like family. That's available for any Alaska Native to access when they become diagnosed HIV positive. And finally, I just want to end that other resources is that we also include counseling over the phone in a free two-way text messaging service for anyone. My final ad is to talk to the Alaska Native women and American Indian women who are living out there with HIV, that to let them know that their lives when they become HIV positive are not over, and neither are their lives as a mother over. Here at ANTHC, we have given birth to over 20 beautiful HIV negative babies to HIV positive mothers, and it's still possible to become pregnant and have a healthy pregnancy and a healthy family even when you are HIV positive, and that life still has possibilities. And so, goodness sheesh for having me on, and that's all I want to add for my fellow Alaska Natives.
All right, Taja, hang out on the line. We want to get some contact info from you. Thanks for your call. Let's go ahead and take another call. We have Demian, who is in Portland, Oregon. We're bringing in his voice. He represents the youthful side of this. He's also an artist and activist. I want to go ahead and welcome him to the hour. And Demian, tell us what you're doing to really get the word out about preventing HIV and AIDS.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for having me on the show. Well, I work closely with I helped to found and I work closely with a Indigenous artist, activist, and warrior collective, which is RISE, and that's Radical Indigenous Survivance and Empowerment. And one thing that we do is create posters that sort of create awareness, whether it's like feminism, the effects of like colonization, genocide, and in this case, HIV and AIDS. We create posters that are meant to be like widely distributed on and off the imaginary boundaries of like Indian reservations. But mostly that address like stigma and the effects of assimilation and, you know, like larger kind of violent ideas that sort of infect Indigenous ways of living. We do that through posters. And so we recently had a poster published which sort of mentioned the ways Indigenous communities are affected by HIV and AIDS.
And Demian, any thoughts on just getting the word out to young people? You know, what is an effective way, or maybe you've been encouraged the way young people are embracing the message?
Yeah, I think, well, we have a blog on Tumblr, and we pretty much try to make as much of an impact through social media as possible. So these two forums really, I think, allow us to reach like out and beyond, you know, just life on the reservation or life in the city. So I've seen some positive impacts that the poster has had so far. We have a site on Tumblr. It's burymyart.tumblr.com. And through this site, we allow access to our posters for free for people to print their high-resolution photos. Again, those are meant for, like, wepasting, putting, you know, posters in your house, in your home. If someone through the social health network or public health network wanted to print these up and put them up, like, that's what they're meant for. So any way to distribute and disseminate these posters is pretty much our main goal. It helps spread that message further into the world.
All right. And Demian, go ahead and give us a website or an email that people can connect with you directly.
Oh, definitely. My website is burymyart.tumblr.com. And you can also email us at burymyart@gmail.com. We also did an interview with Visual Aids in New York City. They are an amazing organization that deals with HIV prevention and art made by HIV and AIDS-affected peoples. The poster will also be featured in the March issue of PAWS magazine as well. And, yeah, I just wanted to thank you for allowing me you know, a moment to kind of like reflect on all this.
All right, Demian, thank you for sharing. And we are getting close to the end of the hour. Tommy, I want to turn it back to you. Any other thoughts you have? We're hearing good information here on the program today. What would you like to leave us with?
Well, one of the things I think I'd like to talk about is a little bit about the treatment of HIV and how it's advanced. And unfortunately, even with the advancements in treatment, Native Americans tend to take advantage of that treatment less than other races. Of all the Native Americans that have HIV, only about 83% have been, 78% have been diagnosed. So roughly 20% don't know they're infected, which you mentioned earlier. And of those, most of those have found out they were infected have been linked to care, but only about half of those are retained in care, actually continuing to seek care and treatment. And one of our biggest goals with people infected with HIV is to get them virally suppressed, and that is to get the amount of virus in their body undetectable. Among all races, close to those diagnosed with HIV, getting close to half of the people diagnosed, 46%, are able to become virally suppressed. Where among Native Americans, those diagnosed, only about 40% are virally suppressed. So we're not getting as much benefit as a community from that treatment that is out there. And we need to really push to get our infected clients into care, to stay in care, so that they can become virally suppressed and therefore lead a longer life and be less infectious and less likely to infect other people.
All right, Tommy, thank you for sharing with us. That's going to do it for the end of the hour. Again, if there's still something you would like to share, you can email us, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Sorry we couldn't get to all the calls. The hour does tend to go by pretty fast, but please do reach out to us on Twitter or Facebook as well. And I want to thank all of the guests who shared information today, Dr. Pamela Jumper-Thurman, Alexander Whitetail Feather, and also Tommy Chesbro. And thanks to our crew here at Native America Calling, also with National Native News and Native Voice One. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood. We will be back again tomorrow.
Sacred Wind Communications education nonprofit, Sacred Wind Community Connect, is a proud sponsor of this program. Sacred Wind provides high school and college scholarships and internet training to areas of the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico, where the parent company provides voice and broadband services. Sacred Wind believes that broadband technologies can reinforce Native cultures and offer other opportunities for self-determination. For more information, log on to sacredwindcommunications.com.
Are you an experienced journalist passionate about bringing Native issues and perspectives to a wide audience? Have you demonstrated ability to lead radio producers and reporters in best practices to produce programs of the highest broadcast standards? You could be the next executive producer, manager of national programs at Kawanak Broadcast Corporation's Albuquerque-based Annenberg National Native Voice Studios. Find the full job description and how to apply at NativeAmericaCalling.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.